Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Ma Prem Maniko. Maniko was born into a musical family and has played with many accomplished musicians from around the world. Maniko took sannyas in 1977 and sang for Osho during Darshan. I'm so happy to have Maniko on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Maniko, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. So to start, tell us a bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, I'm not quite sure if I came across Osho or he came across me, but I was very young. I was only 19, and I had already done much of what I wanted to do. I had a property, I had a business, I had a mate. Everything was beautiful, but I had a very just a magnetic discontent. And so I kind of left everything and I took a trip to Hawaii. And there was a lot of really unusual things happening to me psychically. Like when I would fall asleep, I would leave my body and I would look around the room and it was terrifying. That kept happening and it kept kind of getting me to like question really deeply, what's happening in me and who am I and what's real, what's really valuable. And, you know, I mean, really, as a 19-year-old, there were deep questions like, what is life all about? And one of the experiences brought me to a place where it was so terrifying and I was so far away from my body, even though I could see the room that I was in, but my eyes were closed and I was like out there floating in the cosmos. And I was so, it was beyond fear. It was terror. And I was helpless. There was nothing I could do. And right at the peak of that experience, I basically just surrendered. I had this fear that it was some infinite, eternal evil trying to possess me. I just let go. I just said, okay, take me. And my energy shot down into my body. It was like a lightning bolt. And my heart burst open completely, like I've never wept before in my life. And it wasn't sorrow and it was just like a heart explosion. And that day I packed myself up and I took a trip to Hawaii. I had my son, my 6-month-old son with me, Forrest. And we were in front of a natural food store. I was playing guitar. It was my protector and my kind of guide and singing. And he was playing with a couple of the kids there. And somebody came by and said, introduced themselves and how you doing? And think we got around to, do you have a place to stay? And I said, no. And he said, well, come on up. We have a little guest. It was really kind of lean to in Hawaii, everything's open air. And so I went up there and they showed me to this beautiful little, small little bungalow. And I put my stuff in there and on the bed was a book called Only One Sky. And they were sannyasins. And there was a bunch of sannyasins there at the time. This was late 70s. And I started to read this book and my whole energy exploded. It was like, so, who is this being? This is like a song. This isn't a book. This isn't prose. And I actually, for the first time, felt that I understood all the crazy experiences that were going on in me, because there was a whole world of this enlightened consciousness and, you know, how eloquently he speaks. But there, I just realized I'm not crazy. There was something happening in me. And when I read that book, I was completely, utterly taken right in that moment. And never turned in another direction. And then I took sannyas. I went back to the States, to the mainland in Santa Cruz, and there were a bunch of sannyasins living there. So I was a little resistant, but I loved the meditations and the people were real. I could have real conversations and share things that really were true and that really mattered, from, you know, things that are scary to things that were beautiful. It was just, there was so much authenticity. And then after a little bit of time, I realized you know, as my connection deepened and my trust in meditation and the master deepened, I realized my taking sannyas really had nothing to do with anybody else anywhere in the world. And even I got to the point where I realized it didn't even have anything to do with him. It was a choice I was making. And in some ways, it would be the final choice. Discipleship with him was to commit myself to waking up and to full transformation.
After you decided to take sannyas, so did you then go to India and did you live with Osho during?
I never thought that I would. Some of the sannyasins, Yoga Tao was one of the first Western sannyasins, and she and I became friends. There were some really wonderful people there in Santa Cruz that I could relate to, and they pulled me out of the closet musically. I was very shy about sharing my music because the music was so pure for me, and I didn't want it to get defiled with the craziness of the world and all the egoic behavior. I was already kind of like, I had my own little sanctuary with music and nature, and I was keeping it there. And she was amazing. She really pulled that out of me. In fact, once we went camping, her Kronto and I went camping, and we were sitting by the river, and she says, "Maniko, go get your guitar." I said, She says, "Come on, go get your guitar." Because I was already writing devotional songs at that point. This was early into being a sannyasin. And I was, you know, hemming and hawing and resisting. And she looked at me and she said, "You are so stingy." And I was shocked. I was like, it completely blew away all my everything. All my resistance, all my keeping things that are really precious to me separate from life amongst other human beings. And I went and got my guitar and I started singing a song. He was Bhagwan then, Jai, Jai, Jai Bhagwan. And it started me on a whole path where I realized this is not a half-hearted journey. This is an all-in experience. And I just kept going.
Wonderful. And we naturally already jumped into the main topic of today's episode, which is about music, creativity and self-expression and the use of the voice. So I believe that you sang for Osho during Darshan. And I'd love to hear from you if you could describe for listeners who don't know anything about what Darshan is, how it all worked and your role as a singer at the time.
Sure. Yeah, well, like everything around sannyas, it was chaotic and wonderful. And the musicians were a really amazing bunch of folks where, you know, they're kind of wild and crazy. But when it comes to bringing music together for the master, it's like everyone is like really, really devoted to that. I didn't sing in Pune One, but I did at the ranch. And I wrote songs at the ranch that Anubhava sang some of mine. But once I started working with, you know, it was, gosh, I have to slow this down because I haven't reflected for a long time. I was terrified initially because, you know, there was Morgan Fisher, who was part of Mata Hoople. There was our wonderful percussionist, which is Nivedano, who was part of Weather Report. These were all like working, touring people. Like there were some really fine musicians. And we were looking for songs for Darshan. This is when he was in silence. And I had this little song that I was playing. And it was just a little ditty, really. But, you know, it was called Welcome Home. Sitting here inside your love. And I started singing it. And everybody, you know, there was Toby there and there was all these people and they were all going kind of being critical about things. And I just wanted to back away, but I've forgotten his sannyas name, Morgan Fisher. He started to just play it and he loved it. And then I was again resisting. And then he turned to me and he, you know, this was hardcore stuff, man. This was not, he just looked at me and he said, "Maniko, you just hate yourself." And that was another one of those super hard Zen sticks. And it just woke me up and I stopped resisting and I just started giving the music and my voice and my song. It just kept going. And then The first time I sang with everyone, with him there, I don't know if there's words for it. It was, I felt like I was just a body of light. There was no me. It is absolutely incredible. And it kept, every time I sang with him, you know, it's like I say with him, it's like his listening in our presence as a Buddha field in music and in silence is as transcendent and orgasmic as you can get. That's the best I can say with words, and gave me the courage to be total.
Well, that's wonderful. So essentially, during the ranch, meaning when Osho was in the USA, for people who don't know, and that's the time where, you know, the famous Wild Wild Country was shot, you know, the docuseries was taken during the time. So Osho was in silence during the time, so he would come out just
for darshan, for birthday celebrations, for, you know, parinirvana, for the, you know, the full moon, Guru Purnima. There are about five celebrations where he would come and sit with us, which was a very, you know, when he's in silence and we're all working, these darshans were really, really special, and there were no words. So it really was heart-to-heart communion.
I can feel the energy and the devotion and the love, and something really special happening just watching the videos and listening to the songs that were sang. Probably some of the songs are yours without me even knowing it. I probably danced and sang some of your songs for years.
So, I mean, I also sang in Pune too for, you know, the evening gatherings. And sometimes he would stay in silence. He wouldn't come out, and we would gather in the hall and sing, and the lights would go out and we'd sing in the dark. Oh God, that is just, I don't ever speak of this, Swaram, because there's no way people can understand the magnificence, the beauty, the depth, the lightness, and magnified by, you know, the thousands of people who are all tuned to this magnificent Buddha, and to bring it into song and then let it drop into silence. I feel incredibly grateful and deeply blessed. So when I was singing, he would, you know, his listening is unlike, as a musician, you're always, I mean, developed musicians are basically not so much interested in themselves, but interested in how the music is entering the listener. Because that's what creates the dialogue. That's what creates the beauty of the music, where everybody's participating. And his listening is, there's just no words for it. But there are times when I was singing and he was listening, and he would turn toward me, and it was like a diamond thunderbolt. My whole system would just dissolve and be taken by his listening.
Oh, that's wonderful. I never heard put this into this context of Osho listening and somehow amplifying that energy field that was happening.
Oh, tremendously.
Well, I personally, I wasn't there, but I can totally understand how difficult it is to put into words and describe the experience. But from the receiving side, whenever I hear the songs that were sang for Osho, they are songs, they are non-regular songs, they are charged with energy, and it's still happening. You know, I use these songs during meditation events, and the magic, even if people don't know, but it does happen. And, you know, there is something happening. And even when you were talking before, I was having shivers and goosebumps. So what you guys created there is still available now, which is beautiful.
Yes. And even when I listen to it, there's no time involved in this. It's just like, there's no age, no time, no I, no thou. It's just pure transmission.
So during that time, you had this incredible experience, and then you took all of this beautiful energy and experience of singing devotional song for the master, and you developed some workshops and courses, and you kind of started to work with the voice, and you consider the voice as a creative instrument, and you help people connect the creative power of their voice.
I do.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. Well, I can tell you about my journey toward creating Temple of Song and the voice and self-expression. I just started, you know, first of all, it was a gift that I've always had. You know, song is one of the ways that I survived, you know, the craziness of the world. And I was always able to do it. And I just kind of assumed everybody did. And it took me a while to realize, actually, no, not everybody has this. And for me, it was always a love affair. It was always, you know, a call to the beloved, you know, and in a certain way, every song is. And I just started to really break it down into its parts. But what I had and what I have that so few people have, except some really brilliant, brilliant, well-developed artists, is that I knew how to get out of the way. And so I basically started working not with vocal technique, but with the human being. Because that wholeness, getting people present, getting them to be able to empty out their neurosis, getting loose and present, all the meditations that I've done. I mean, I even work with modified pieces of Osho's meditation. I have to, you know, adjust it to depending on what I'm doing. But movement and sound and stillness and breath and let go and witnessing, they get a human being present. Once somebody's really present, then I can start to work with what their natural expressive impulse is. And once we're there, the pathways start to open on their own. And then I start to work with generating sound, and I use many of the songs that I've written and other devotional songs by friends, by Miten and Abhinandan and myself and some of the Puna One songs, because they're so beautiful. They really allow a person to open up and deepen, and every repetition gets richer. And then their presence gets richer. And then I'll start to work with specific people in them being able to identify what is that natural movement to, you know, what in your individuality is seeking expression in this life. And I have a whole host of ways that I will kind of catalyze that.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I personally can't sing. I just want to share something personal here, and I'm really bad at it, but I love doing it. I just do love
it. Well, good. Then that's all you have to do is keep singing. I'll give you a little
My beloved has something to say about that.
Okay, so let me tell you this. There's many, many parts to it. People who say they can't sing, it's not that they can't sing. It's that somewhere in their development and the challenges of early life, they learn to disassociate from hearing, because hearing and feeling are really, they're almost like the inhale and the exhale, and they're very, very sensitive. And if there were people yelling or people, you know, or scary environments, or there was a lot of punishment, people start to, you know, or they're being forced into being completely linear through school, different temperaments. Once you can start to open up to really hearing, you will automatically be in tune, because the same neurology that allows you to speak allows you to sing. All that's happened is there may be some trauma or some shock in there that got you to disassociate with hearing. So, you know, I work with this all the time, and I have never met a person who can't sing. Staying on tune takes a little practice if you've practiced kind of backing away. But if you already love to sing, you know, you just have to hear more, like really hear the notes.
Well, look, this makes so much sense. I'm really impressed, because that's what my beloved is saying, because she's into music. She's a very good singer, actually. Not professional. Mm-hmm. She hasn't gone down that way, unfortunately. Hopefully she will pick it up when she has more time. But she that's what she tells me. Like, you can't hear music. And it's true. You know, I can't hear that.
All your awareness into hearing. If you sit in front of a piano and you just hit one note, you pluck a note, and you really listen, and then you just match that tone. If you put all your awareness in your listening, in your hearing, you will get it. And you will know you get it because it feels good. And if you start to wobble, it's you at least are hearing that you're not getting it, which means you can get it.
It's a meditation of the sound, bringing awareness to the sound. And it's so difficult. It is difficult for me, I have to say, because
you have to slow things way, way, way down. And hearing is very, very sensitive. So feelings come with hearing as well. And, you know, there's all these kind of involuntary knee-jerk reactions to want to stay away from it. And it takes a while to grow those neural pathways again. But if you love to sing, that's already 80% of the work. The rest is just slow it down so you can really hear and start gently just to make sure you find the notes.
Well, that's very encouraging. I love singing just because whenever I'm in a good mood and I've got abundant energy, I found myself naturally singing. It just happens, you know. You know, there's a la 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 la. I just do that, whatever comes. And it's just a form of expression of overflowing positive energy that I express through the voice. But obviously, I can't make any.
I'd love to work with you, Soram. Because there's the other element with voice is when you start to give your voice into the space, you're very naked. And it's very, in many ways, especially if you have a listener or you're singing with people, it's very, very intimate. And this is why we love it so much, but it's also why it's so frightening. And most of us our voices were shut down because in school you had to be correct all the time. And as children, you would be romping and playing and squealing, and people would say, "Be quiet," you know. And after a while, so many human beings just gave it up and just learned to do things correctly, and you know, just let's avoid that part. And because it's painful for, you know, especially when children are condemned for being fully alive, which is really what's happening. They don't understand the adult context. They just feel like every time I'm fully alive and I have strong feelings and I make sound, something terrible happens to me.
Yeah. And it seems like the work you do is so much deeper than just helping people with the voice and singing. You know, it has its roots in much more deep emotional and psychological dimensions and levels, which is beautiful. And you just said something that I'd like to pick up on. And, you know, some people talk a lot. You know, we all have experience of those guys who you ask a question and they start talking and they never stop and you feel like, okay, that's a monologue. So, and it's a form of expression via talking, and which is different from the expression of the voice in singing. So I don't know if you ever thought of that, but what would you say is the difference between expressing yourself through talking nonstop or singing?
That's not really, it's not either or of those. First of all, people who are just doing monologues don't listen. You know, everything is dialogue. The whole of existence is call and response, you know? So, you know, being able to be a good speaker, even the people who are like, you know, I've worked with many speakers, you know, earn quite a bit of money just doing a talk, but they're all tuned primarily to the listener, because it's only as good as what is being heard, right? So that's one thing about speaking. People who are just like, I'm not very good monologuer, because if it's just up to me, I'm just going to be quiet. But if there's a human being that I'm in relationship with or I am sharing something with, then it becomes a dialogue, which makes it interesting because we don't know where it's going to go. We're listening to it and feeling each other. I mean, that's a more musical way of speaking. And that also needs to be taught, because most people are taught just to get through the information, or they're really a little on the, you know, narcissistically bound. So they just need to unload their stuff. Or they just don't know how to hear that there are people listening. And so, I mean, in a way, it's all music.
Well, look, you're really opening a new dimension, and it's wonderful, because thinking of singing, it's an expression. You think that you're going from A to B, but what you're saying here, it's learning how to hear, learning how to listen to, and this idea of a dialogue and listening, hearing, which is very meditative, it's the art of meditation. It's really mind-opening, and I just had this image of the bird singing. You know, I'm here in Singapore and I'm so lucky because I can every morning hear the bird singing. And I started to notice a pattern that the birds are not just singing randomly, but sometimes they are talking to each other. There is a bird which starts a sound, and then after a while there is a corresponding, like a response. So yes. It's so fascinating.
You know, here's the thing. If you add your listening and appreciation to the sound that the bird is making, the bird is going to feel that. And you can start to be part of that play. You can start to whistle or try and imitate the sound. They will feel that. They're very tuned.
Wow, that's amazing. Now I'm going to start playing with the birds. I'm going to start singing with the birds. That would be my next thing.
I live on 5 acres in Northern California. I'm constantly, you know, I'm singing with the birds or listening and appreciating them and the trees. And, you know, it's like the centerpiece of the work I do is helping people develop the capacity for attunement. And what that means is first to be in tune with what moves you, then to learn how to give that, and then to keep it moving in a always present here and now, what's moving from the inside, sharing it to the outside, and then you feel the listener or the outer world respond that then feeds you, and then you just keep that. It's like an infinite loop of connection. It's absolutely empowering.
Wow, this is mind-blowing, and I'm so excited. I can't wait to start this experiment singing with the birds and talking to the birds. I already do it with the trees, even though they don't vocalize.
So everything can feel love and appreciation and awareness. The birds are really fun. And also, for you, Swaram, you know, try doing some note matching. Maybe your beloved will help you with that. Just one or two notes. Just purely hearing and then matching it. Because once you get the knack, what you're doing is you're reconnecting something that's natural anyway. You had to practice going away from it.
Great. Okay. I'll try that. I'll try it for sure. Okay. So I've got another question for you. So singing can take many different shapes and forms. For example, I think that there is a big difference between chanting a mantra or singing a devotional song or singing, you know, a normal, regular song. So I'd like to hear your point of view. What's your take on this?
Well, for me, that's not true. I mean, the devotional songs hit certain centers, right? But for me, if I'm going to sing something, I'm going to put all of me in it, which means all of my love and juice and playfulness. It's all about the context of whatever the song is holding. Like, you know, I sing other, you know, not just prayer songs or mantras or chants, but also regular songs, and you just pour your heart into it. It all depends on what you bring to it, Swaram. That's what makes something really musical. If you do anything mechanical, it's not going to be moving. People chant all the time and they're totally asleep. You know, it's not moving, but you bring your heart and soul to anything, and it's going to pop open with aliveness.
Thank you for clarifying that. So going back to Osho for 1 second, even though we never left Osho, but So what's the biggest gift you received from Osho that helps you in the work you do today?
Well, there's one phrase that has stuck with me. There's two phrases, and there's a discourse, the Divine Melody No. 9. When I was at the ranch, especially when things were getting really weird, I listened to that every single night as I fell into sleep. And so when I started, you know, facilitating bigger groups when I lived in the Bay Area near San Francisco and working with some really dynamic organizations and pretty well-known, amazing people, I learned from my master how to get out of the way, completely get out of the way. And then there's a few little simple lines that I have felt so deeply that all I had to do is remember them and everything would get grounded and centered and clear. In other words, I get my own you know, worry, fear, and doubt. That's my handle. Get the worry, fear, and doubt out of the way and just go and bring what you have to any environment. And there's two things. Love and the ego cannot exist together. The other one that has helped me more than anything, especially if there was a very big group and I was getting nervous or scared or there was chaos around and, you know, there was all, you know, when you're working with people and they don't know who you are or they themselves are scared. And a lot of people are very scared when it comes to voice and sound. You can get hijacked with that, you know, because when people are scared, they often get critical. One of the most beautiful teachings that has come through him to me is that love makes you a nobody. So be nothing. And every time I've remembered that, I go into a space working with people and my own storyline is gone and I just go and find the heart and soul of the people and start to work. And then it's just amazing. It's like learning to get out of the way and just pouring your love. That means being listening and being respectful and really bringing all the skillful means that I have to any environment. But the knack of learning how to get out of the way, oh man, that is like, it's freedom. And it's never not worked, Swaram. Always, when I just remember that, and I remember it every time, so I can wholeheartedly say that I have never done a group or a workshop that wasn't absolutely amazing.
That sounds simple, but I'm sure it's not.
Yeah, it's like the whole gig. Get out of the way.
Get out of the way. So, Maniko, we are heading towards the end of the show. Before I ask you three final questions, I'd love to hear what are your current activities and projects.
Well, I've been doing, I moved up from the Bay Area about 8 years ago, and I basically moved my work and everything. I always had the vision, a dream of, I wanted, because the nature of the work I do is very deep, and it's very powerful, and it's very vulnerable. And it's really wild at times. I wanted to build a space, a temple, a mandir that was just for my workshops and meditation retreats. So I've been basically taking everything I do. I'm now in the Sierra foothills in Northern California. And I'm doing, you know, I do 8-week singing sangha, Diamond Voice singing sanghas in the spring and the fall. It's a closed group, so we can really go deep. And it is exactly what I'm saying. It's a singing sangha. It's meant to be a gathering where we use song and we use our voices and meditation to generate consciousness in the world. It's kind of a healing, transformation, creativity journey. And then I have a 9-day in the summer solstice. It's a residential retreat, which is really powerful. And in that one, I use voice and cycles of meditation. In that longer retreat, we do constellations, and I do it differently than family constellations. I do what I call essential constellations. And during those, the people, because we're in meditation and there's no chit-chat and there's no distractions, when someone has been part of a constellation, they write exactly what they experienced for someone, whoever's constellation it is, and they give it to the people whose constellation it is. So they have like, you know, 4 or 5 different things. It's like this beautiful. And then we take that writing and we start to create poetry, and out of that we create songs. So I really love this. I'm with people that I've all these, it's probably in the hundreds of songs, original songs that people have been able to create with my help they're really powerful because every facet of it is true and beautiful. So they become like a light on the path.
Well, absolutely fantastic. And I'm so curious and, you know, I'd love to join one of your singing groups. So where people can find you if they want to know more about you and your activities or get in touch with you?
The best is just go to templesong.com. Right now I'm on 5 acres and I have a beautiful temple in the forest that just looks out into the trees. And I live in an area where if they want to come and visit, there's a space. It's really beautiful. It's very, very beautiful here. So templeofsong.com.
Excellent. And I'll link the website to the notes of the show. So I've got three final questions for you. The first is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
That's my favorite time. Well, I wake up anywhere from 4:30 to 5, and I get up and I have my tea for about an hour and a half. I just sit there and I have a couple cups of tea. So I start with silence. And then, you know, then I get on with taking a shower and doing some exercises. But I basically have an hour and a half to almost 2 hours every morning where I just sit and be with the morning coming. I always wake up before the light, and it's my favorite time.
Second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Oh, that's too hard. I love meditation. I mean, kind of everything I do is a meditation. Sound and silence, you know. I love, if it's just the Osho meditations, I would have to say probably Nada Brahma. I love them all, Soram. I'm not going to be able to have a favorite.
Okay, no worries at all. That's fine. So the last question is, you lived the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
Well, it's from the alone to the alone. I mean, he wasn't bullshitting when he said, you are alone. I was so blessed to have the fullness of the Buddha field and years and years and years while he was in the body and we were all together. And it was just remarkable and filled with paradox and contradiction and love and intensity. So it's a very quiet, private thing, although many of the people who have worked with me have taken sannyas just because of it's contagious. I don't talk about him, but people know that I have pictures of him in the temple and I tell stories of different experiences I've had and learning how to let go and to trust life. And of course, he's involved in all of that. Tell me again what the question was.
I think you answered already, and that's it's absolutely fine, and it's beautiful. That's the end of the show, and I really want to thank you for sharing your beautiful insights. And actually, I've learned a lot personally, and it really made so much sense what you were saying about music and using the voice. It's more about hearing and listening and having a dialogue. And then the other highlight is get out of the way. I'm gonna use this for sure. Well, Manikyo, thank you so much. It's been amazing connecting with you, and I'm really curious even more now about the work you do, and I'd love to meet you and attend one of your workshops and finally kind of playing with my voice in a more meaningful way. And also, the other big thing is start talking to the birds and singing with the birds. That's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's like just be like a child. Play with your sound. And I just have to say this one more time, because if you are appreciating the sound of the birds and your awareness is there, they're going to feel that. And if you just make a little sound in their direction, you're going to be really surprised. They're going to feel that.
I'll try that starting now. Well, thank you so much. Okay. And so much love and a big hug, and hope to meet you in person soon.
I would like that, Soram. And thank you for doing what you do. It's lovely.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.